It's time for Nothing But Sex. Hosted by Maxim sex columnist Vanessa Delaggi. Fierce, unapologetic, politically incorrect, the topics will whet more than just your appetite. Let's journey through taboo sexual terrain with a delicious earful of Nothing But Sex. Here's Vanessa.
I've been working my way up to recording this episode for quite some time now. It's not really going to be a sexy episode per se, but it will shine a light on the aftermath of sexual assault and how one can get back to themselves. It's also worth mentioning that my way may not be another survivor's way, because we're all individuals and we're all different and we all overcome various adversities differently and come to it differently. So what has worked for me may not work for another. It may kind of seem creepy or weird or full on, and I may look at how other people have dealt with it and sort of think, oh, that's not how I dealt with it. So none of them are right or wrong. So I just wanted to say that. I also wanted to say that this episode is not going to be focused on my rape itself, although I will shine a light on it a little bit for those who haven't read my memoir without my consent or read my columns where I share more intricate details. Obviously, no one really wants to go into the ins and outs. Pardon the pun, I still have my wit left. But yes, I want to focus more on how to be a sexual person after you've experienced something so horrific. So yeah, that's where I'm going to start. So I basically spent my teens and early 20s earning a crust as a promo model. And I really loved being a promo model because it only had three requirements. You had to look good, you had to be bubbly, and you had to smile a lot. And that is basically the only three requirements that were needed to get the work. And it wasn't great money, but when you're, you know, 16 to, I did it up until I was 33, 16 to 33, you know, it's a little bit of money. It pays for your acting classes. It helps pay the rent or put petrol in the car or whatever. And also I got to work with like a lot of luxury brands back then, and they would give their teams of promo girls, often would get freebies. And who doesn't love freebies? Free makeup, free liquor, free clothes, free stuff to do with the AFL, Australian football, all of that kind of stuff. So there was a few perks in being a promo girl. Anyway, back then I worked a lot with Wild Turkey Bourbon. And what would happen is we would go to bars and clubs throughout Perth, and our job was to go and talk to guys and try and you know, sort of say, oh, have you heard of Wild Turkey Bourbon? And what do you think of it? You know, are you a regular drinker of it? And so get them in conversation. And then if they said that they liked bourbon, or if they said that they liked another brand of bourbon more, we'd ask why, and then we would give them a free voucher that might get them, you know, a discount on buying a bourbon at the bar. So that was one thing. And then there was another part of it where we would make them play all these silly games with balls and all sorts of things. We'd set up all different games, and if they won, there was all this merchandise that they would win. So it could be, it might be a hat or a t-shirt or all this sort of branded stuff. And if they were really lucky, they might win a bottle of bourbon or more free vouchers to spend at the bar that night. So Yeah, I know it sounds really funny, but I really loved promo work because it didn't require me to think. And I mean, a lot of actors and artists, they will go and work in hospitality. And I've worked in hospitality myself at certain times throughout my career. But, you know, they'll work at a hospitality or they'll go and do admin work or whatever. But hospitality and admin, it still kind of requires you to think because you're dealing with the public, you have to handle money, all of that kind of stuff. Whereas promo modeling, it literally is kind of lazy in a way. Like you just stand there and look good. It doesn't really require much mental energy. And I really liked that because obviously promo modeling was not my dream in life. My dream was always to act and to write. So I just needed a little bit of money on the side to be able to fund things that I wanted to do. So it worked well for me there. So anyway, this particular weekend, I was working at a high-end bar where all the corporates and suits hang out, and we were doing a Wild Turkey promo. And during the promotion, I ran into this guy that I'd met the year prior. Because as well as my promo work, I also used to do a lot of seasonal bar work back then, meaning that during peak seasons, like end of school year and during summer, I would go around as a barmaid for 3 weeks to 6 weeks, and I would go to all seaside villages or coastal places like Lancelot or islands like Rottnest Island where I met John, and I would work as a barmaid. And then pretty much after you finished your shift, you're working in this pumping environment anyway. And then once you finished your shift, you and all the other people that were working, you would just party and then do it all again tomorrow. So I had met John the year prior while I was working, and we got into conversation, and then we had drinks after the promo, and then we decided to get a cab and go to Northbridge. Now, Northbridge is like a bar and restaurant kind of strip in Perth. So we went there and we had dinner and we had more drinks, and then we caught a cab back to his. So basically, he was one big disappointment. I was young and naive and besotted with him, and I thought that he would treat me better, and I thought we'd sit up drinking and talking and fucking, but he was primarily interested in the latter. So we fucked, and he passed out, and then later on he rolled on top of me and we fucked again. And I can remember, because we'd had a meal, it was a spicy meal, I can remember that my tummy was rumbling, and you know, I liked him so much and I didn't want to hear him to hear it, and I was really embarrassed. But it really fucking didn't matter because he was dead to the world. He was asleep, so I shouldn't have even bothered worrying about that. And then when he woke up later to do a piss, you know, I thought that maybe the night would continue or whatever. And he kicked me out, and he had promised to drive me home. But he made up some excuse about that his mum had his car or had the keys to his car or some bullshit. And I was very inebriated, so I just set out to find a phone box, because in those days there was no mobile phones. Well, some people had them, but it was very, very rare. You might get the odd businessman, you'd see his mobile phone, they'd wear them on the back of their jeans in the late 90s. But yeah, a mobile phone would have helped a lot of people in the shit who found themselves in the shit in the late 90s, but unfortunately we didn't have them, and I didn't have very much money. So I went to look for a phone box, and I didn't get to that phone box for a long, long time, because I ran into trouble along the way. And I even think about it now, and I discuss this in my memoir, Without My Consent, but it's just so surreal because all I was thinking of as it was happening was, am I going to live? That pretty much was the only thing that I was thinking of. I just hope that I can get through this. I hope that I can survive this. And it was very brutal. And it was, what can you say? It's probably the worst thing that can happen to you as a woman. So, I'm here, you know. So you can imagine what followed that. I had to tell my mum and dad, then I had to go to the hospital, and then there was a long, long, long aftermath of doctors and rape counselling and being put on medication and, just all of that unfolding pretty much. And it's paralyzing in so many ways, and it takes a long time for you to unpack it. And that's why it was so important for me to write about without my consent, because I slowly unpack all the parts of it, because it's not just you, it's your parents. I mean, I was very close to my mum and dad, so they were so hurt too, because you imagine being an elderly dad. Because I have four brothers, Damien passed away, but I have four brothers. You imagine being an elderly dad, because they had me so many years after the boys, and not being able to protect your only daughter. You know, you imagine the stress that would have caused my dad, and it hurt my mum too. So we all went through that. So let's just backtrack a little bit. I have always been a sexual being, and I honestly believe that I was born this way. I mean, it's not environment, it's not conditioning, it isn't the impact of my sexual assault or abuse. I just think that some things in life just are, and that's how I feel about my fierce female sexuality. And you've got to remember that rape isn't about sex anyway, even though we say that it is. Rape is about power, it's about control. So the forced sex is pretty fucking shit. But what's worse is the fear of death. What is going to happen after they finish? You could die, basically. So that's usually how that plays out. And that's, you go to a different place, you kind of detach from the experience. But bizarrely, society doesn't even validate female sexuality. You know, if you're fiercely sexual, it must be because of something. You're neurotic and mentally ill, or it's because of some traumatic sexual event in your past. They just don't think that it's a naturally occurring thing. And it is, because I am living proof, baby. It's all bull dust. Like, sexual liberation should be cherished. It should be something that you are unashamed of. So how did I work my way through the aftermath of rape? Well, first thing is you're trying to get back ownership of your womanly parts, basically. So a lot of excessive masturbation occurs, and that still happens to this day. I love masturbating, and it's about, you know, connecting with myself. Like, I am the proprietor of that house, you know, that my vagina, my cunt. I am the proprietor. I am the owner. You have to ask. You need a special, beautiful diamond key to get in there, because it's fucking really locked. There's a lot of security around it now, alarm systems and God knows what else. So it's taking ownership and causing your own orgasms. And also it plays out in role play, like kink and BDSM. And rape fantasies, etc. All of this kind of stuff in a consensual, controlled environment. I've written about rape play before and rape fantasies in controlled environments, and they're very healing and they're very cathartic because you're getting to rewrite your past, rewrite the narrative. And when you do, it's very healing. You take back your control. So I would say that that is the constant conflict, basically. And I think maybe it might last for one's whole life. They're always trying to get ownership of that. So that's why you often find people that have experienced sexual abuse or assault of some sort do exist in the BDSM community. Not all, but they do. I've met many. And I think it's because of that. I'm not going to speak for anyone else, but I'm saying that's what attracts me to it personally. And of course, some women run the other way. They never get their sexual selves back. Like, it destroys their sexual selves, or they just decide to shut down and they feel safe and healed by doing that. And that is perfectly okay. Whatever works for you. For me, I just sort of thought I was a sexual being beforehand, like prior. So I wanted to be a sexual being after. Like, I was so young, I was 20. So you've got so much life ahead of you. I wasn't just going to have no sex life, you know, for the next fucking 50, 60 years. Like, it's so much of who I am. I'm not going to be robbed of that. So for me, it's probably given me sexual strength. And it's a weird thing to say, but it's like you often hear cancer survivors, they'll say, I am so grateful that I got cancer. And I don't think they mean it in a way that, you know, they probably wish they'd never got cancer, but they're grateful for the lessons they've learned from getting it, you know, where it's taken them spiritually and emotionally, the journey that is life. I'm not saying that I'd want to go through that experience again, but I have learned a lot. Like, I'm a different person. I've evolved. I'm compassionate. It changes you. You can never get your old self back. But the old self would be weird if you were to go into her knowing this person. It would be weird because there's a lot that she doesn't know. She was so naive. But that's my way. And that's what I've done. And also, there's also the creative side of it for me too, with my poetry and my erotic photo shoots and my erotic art and this sex podcast and my sex columns and my sex blogs and reviewing sex toys and stuff. That is all part of ownership. It's all part of empowerment. It's all part of strength. It's all taking back and making sure that I am in fucking control of my sexuality. So that is how I've dealt with it. And I feel very settled and in a happy place with those choices and that kind of sexual healing. Well, I'll leave it there. There's nothing else to say, really. I think I've pretty much covered everything. This was a long episode. I hope you've managed to stay for the whole train wreck of me yabbering. And I hope you tune in for the next episode. Thanks for listening.
If you liked what you heard here, hit subscribe in your podcast app to get every episode and share it with whoever you dare. You can see more about Vanessa at vanessadelargy.net. Thanks for listening to Nothing But Sex. Please come again.